I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now, part two of my conversation with Andrew Young. He was a trusted aide to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. during the Civil Rights Movement. He went on to serve as a U.S. congressman from Georgia, as mayor of Atlanta, and as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Last week, in the first part of our conversation, Ambassador Young talked about matters close to home, particularly the battle for the Democratic presidential nomination. He's backing Senator Hillary Clinton. Today, though, we're going to hear about his passion for Africa and the role he's playing in promoting economic development there through the Leon Sullivan Foundation, which hosts biennial summits to promote economic development in Africa. This year, the summit will be held in East Africa for the first time, in Tanzania. He's been so identified with the struggles of the disenfranchised in the U.S. and for so long, I was curious about why he still works so hard and how he got interested in Africa.
Well, you know, I think all of my life has been a blessing. Everything has just happened to me. I didn't seek it. I wasn't trying to be congressman or mayor. I ended up pastoring a little country church, and that led me into the civil rights movement. And one thing just led to the another, and I have just been wonderfully blessed, as the old folks say. And I was always taught that when you get this kind of blessing that I've had, you really have an obligation to pass it on. Now, my parents and grandparents all had an opportunity to get a college education, and it was basically because of missionaries. So I was raised with a kind of a missionary spirit, and actually, in 1955, I had signed up to go to Africa as a missionary, and the Portuguese weren't letting us wouldn't let us into Angola, so we ended up going to Georgia instead. But it's probably good that I went to Georgia instead, because I never would have made it in Angola all this time. But everything that has happened, and particularly the success in Atlanta and the Olympics, with the Olympics, we raised $2.5 billion privately. And my partner, who was a Jamaican-born Canadian banker with the Toronto Olympic Committee, and I were talking. And you said, you know, it's a shame. It's wonderful and yet it's pitiful that we have raised $2.5 billion for a two-week track meet. I wonder why we can't raise that kind of money to help feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and heal the sick in Africa. And he said, you know, nobody's ever tried. And so we ended up forming a company called Good Works International to try to take some of the experiences that we've had in banking and in government, helping to use the private sector to develop the African continent.
What is the goal there? Is it to try to, you know, who are you hoping will attend these summits? And I should mention
that
these summits have been going on since
1991. Well, let me just get to the summit, because in the middle of this, Leon Sullivan came into our office and said, look, I'm 78 years old, and I don't know how long I'll be able to keep these up. By that time, we'd had five summits that he had put together that were attempting to build a bridge. You know, everybody says, why is it that African-Americans are not as involved in Africa as the Irish are in Ireland, as the Jews are in Israel, as the Italians are in Italy? Well, one of the answers is that Africa is so large, and none of us know directly where we've come from. So Dr. Sullivan started saying, well, we've got to serve the whole continent.
Well, one of the interesting things about these summits is that they're open to anyone who wants to go. I mean, a lot of these sort of international trade conferences, yeah, they are by invitation. You have to be a business person of a certain level within the corporation. This is one of those things that's open to everybody. It's very interesting in that regard. Why did you all do it that way?
Well, I think that was Dr. Sullivan's way of saying, whosoever will, let him come. And we have the top-level executives. We have the international vice presidents of companies. We have the heads of state. We will have the members of Congress. But we also have teachers. We'll also have doctors. We'll also have students. And we like that mix because it keeps it from being totally formal. I don't know whether you've been to any of these UN sessions or the World Trade Organization sessions, but they're about as formal, as phony as anything I can get to. We have a good time. We have dinner together. We have socialize in the evenings. And we will build relationships between about a couple of thousand people who are committed to Africa.
You make an important point, though, which is that Africa is a continent, not a country.
That's right.
And the people who do tend to have these strong relationships to home country are tied to a country. How do you develop those relationships in the absence of, I mean, there's been generations, it's hundreds of years from the time that people left to now.
It's hundreds of years for 4.5 million of us. But there are 5 million Africans who have come to the United States since 1970. And they are the second most educated group of immigrants coming into the United States. And many of them come in with money. And they've done quite well. Now what we're seeing on the African continent, and we see it very plain in Nigeria and in Ghana, where the Nigerians going back to Nigeria every year are sending back and are taking back about $8.5 billion annually. In Ghana, which is much smaller, the Ghana population may be 30 million. Nigeria is 150 million. But in Ghana, they're taking back $2 or $3 billion, are sending back to their relatives. Now that conditions are stabilizing on the African continent, many of these young people and the children of those who came are looking to go back and rebuild their lives in Africa, very much as the Italians and the Irish, more recently the Indians.
Two questions for you, and they're both ones on which we could spend a lot of time, so I'm just wanting to be as brief as you can. The first is that what do you say to African Americans who say that there are still so many issues in the United States that are not resolved? There are so many inequities. There are so many challenges that African Americans face in America that remain unresolved.
Well,
you're fully acquainted.
No, I say stay here and do that. But there's some of us that realize that the Indian population, for instance, is doing much better now. They are becoming the trade representatives for Indian trade. Korean Americans have tied themselves to the Korean economy, and they're doing well because of that. The Irish in America and in Ireland are working together. And I think the sooner we began to build some bridges, politically and economically with the African continent, the better off we're going to be here. We don't have enough clout here to help ourselves quite often. I mean, we're getting to be a diminishing minority that has become so successfully assimilated that we're not helping our own people very much anymore. We're trying to survive in a global economy. Well, I think we will survive better and we will help our own people better as we begin to make connections with the African continent.
What do you say to those who are perhaps more connected to Africa, who are perhaps first generation, who say there's a reason my parents left, which is the lack of stability, the lack of transparency in government, and the corruption? And they say that, look, you know, that's why that Africans have work to do before they can reasonably expect the rest of the world to invest and participate. What do you say to that?
I say, I can't say it over television, over radio. But it has something to do with something you might step in a cornfield where there are a whole lot of bulls around.
Oh, dear.
But no, it's nonsense because, well, I had this almost argument with Dave Dinkins when we were at Howard together. And he was saying, you mean you're going back to the South where you got out of the South? Why don't you just come on and stay here in New York or Washington? And I said, no, we've got to go back and straighten out the South. And I said, we will probably straighten it out quicker than you will in New York. And I think maybe there's some truth to that.
But if you look at the situation now in Kenya, which has been struggling since December.
No, let's
December.
Don't look at Kenya. Let's don't look at Kenya.
Why? No, it's considered one of the most stable. It has been considered one of the most stable countries on the continent. And now they're struggling to survive elections that were held, you know, 3-4 months ago.
Yeah, but there's never been all that stability in Kenya. Kenya has always been been divided by tribalism that they wouldn't take openly. Kenya needs to have a good dose of affirmative action and a good dose of what we call quotas, the things that we don't want. We're going to Tanzania because Tanzania had 123 tribal groups. But Julius Nyerere had the wisdom to pull them together and to say, we're going to eliminate our tribal languages for the most part, and we're going to concentrate an education system on English and Swahili. And he united that country, and it's been peaceful, and it's had democratic elections for the 60 years that it's been independent. So that's where we're going. The tragedy is that Americans only hear about the bad things that are going on in Africa. And so we know about Darfur, and we know about AIDS, and we know about Kenya. But the New York Times did a headline on Kenya and pictures of people burning. But that was only one or two paragraphs of the story. The rest of the page was about a successful election in Nigeria, which, while it was challenged, in the courts. 15 of the 36 governors, the elections were overthrown, and they will be redone in some kind of way. There was a constitutional process that handled all of the difficulties of Nigeria, and that didn't get any attention. We also have a daily flight to Nigeria from Atlanta to Lagos, that is flying full. And they're not begging anybody to come back. People are going back because they want to go back. A few years back, I don't know what it is now, but one of our major clients was making 41 cents on a dollar invested in Nigeria. That's why they ought to go back. And Nigeria has probably done, in the last 20 years, what it took America 200 years to do in dealing with corruption. You still have corruption in many major cities in the United States. And we can lecture Africa about corruption, but I don't know what you call it with all of this shenanigans around the, you know, subprime mortgage business. There are going to be a lot of people going to jail. And, I mean, Africa is not alone in corruption. And what we're saying is that, in fact, what our business is that when you get to know people and when you get to know the social circumstances, you can do business with it. In fact, we've been doing business in Africa now for 12 years. We've never been asked for a bribe, and we've never paid one. So we have benefited as much from Africa. In fact, right now, oil has gone up to $112 a barrel. I tried to tell people all the way back in the Carter administration, we needed to build better relationships with Africa, increase our supply from the African continent. Right now, we're getting almost a fourth of our oil from Africa. We could be getting as much as a third.
Are you frustrated that after all this time that you've been working on this, that you feel there's still a sort of a distance between the U.S. and Africa, that people still seem, I don't know, what's the word, sort of afraid of it, or there's still so much distance, mystery, lack of friendship awareness?
Actually, we're doing something on that, too. I got so sick and tired of it that last year, every time I went to Africa, I took a film crew with me. And we've made a series of films on Africa, a continent of opportunities. And we're releasing one of them every quarter. We did one on Rwanda last quarter. The one this quarter, starting in April, there'll be 100 stations around the country showing an hour-long film on Africa, a continent of opportunities. And then in June, we'll do one on Tanzania. In September, we'll do one on Nigeria. And we've got to tell the African story. We can't wait for somebody else to do it. I think of Africa as the missing link in the global economy. And Africa is a place that I think where humanity started, but I think we're going to have to return to Africa together, Americans, European, Chinese, and Latins. And we will find in Africa not just the minerals, but also the market. And we'll find the intelligence. We'll find the herbal knowledge and medicines that I think will help us have a lower-cost health insurance. And I've staked my hopes on the African continent for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Young is the chairman of the Leon H. Sullivan Foundation, which hosts biennial summits to promote economic development in Africa. This year, the summit will be held in Tanzania. If you want to hear part one of our conversation with Andrew Young on religion, politics, and race, please visit our website at npr.org/tellmemore. And finally, today is the annual national observance of Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day. The goal of the event is to increase children's awareness of career options. And here at NPR, many of us have brought in our children and the children in our lives to get a taste of the radio business. So with that in mind, we've placed our young visitor in a chair and behind a microphone.
Hi, my name is Khalif Nelson. My Aunt Marie works at Tell Me More. Next week, the show is having its first birthday, a whole year of interesting conversations and ideas. And I bet you have some memories. We want to know what you heard or read on the blog that made you stop and think, and go, huh, I wonder about that. Or maybe something made you mad, or maybe something made you happy. My favorite memory is being made right now. It's not every day that a sixth grader gets to share airtime with Michelle Martin. Now it's your turn. You can tell us what you remember most and ask questions about the show. Just visit npr.org/tellmemore. Or you can call our comment line at 202-842-3522. Again, that number is 202-842-3522. Remember, at Tell Me More, the conversation never ends.
Why, thank you, Khalif. I think he's going to be trying to get my job. I better watch my back. I couldn't have said it better myself. Khalif Nelson attends Murray Hill Middle School in Laurel, Maryland. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.